Welcome to the serialized short story audiobook collection, Bones Are White, by Scott Sigler. Get the stories in Bones Are White for all ebook readers at scottsigler.com/bonesarewhite, or from that same page as a full-length audiobook. You can also buy the ebook version directly from the Kindle Store, the Nook Store, Apple's iBooks, and from Google Play. This book contains harsh language, adult situations, and lots of violence. So if you're easily offended, cue up some Taylor Swift and enjoy.
Chuckles Mulrooney, attorney for the damned. Victor Sellers swayed slightly from side to side, a testament to his lack of sobriety, considering that he was sitting at the kitchen table, leaning heavily on both elbows. In front of him stood a half-empty bottle of five-star vodka, its clear warmth and the promise of forgetfulness beckoning to him like a mermaid calling to a wayward galleon. His right hand clutched a cell phone, the call delivering the good news he'd passionately visualized for over a decade could only be moments away. His other hand gripped the handle of a beat-up .44 Magnum, a present from his father. An inheritance, actually, seeing as father's last act was using the .44 to splatter his brains all over the rumpus room. Victor had kept the gun as a morbid memento. He was the next big horror writer, after all, and such a grisly talisman seemed to fit his prefabricated image of a twisted literary superstar. He'd never planned to use the gun for anything other than interviews with Entertainment Weekly, a publicity stunt to show just how messed up he was. People got off on that shit if you were a horror writer. They wanted to know you were damaged in some way, as if your deviance and lack of normalcy justified creation of dreadful yarns. How ironic that he now planned on using the .44 in the same fashion as his dear old dad. Like father, like son. The hollow point rounds would do more than just take a chip off the old block. Victor's head hung down until his precisely shaggy hair brushed the tabletop. He'd just written his masterpiece, clearly the best work he'd ever done. After 10 years of mediocre manuscripts, 10 years of striving to be the new master of horror, Generation X's answer to Stephen King, 10 years of wading through the ego-laden short story market, 10 years of kissing ass in the holier-than-thou old boys network of the writing awards circuit, 10 years of chasing the latest Me Too fad, vampires, then time travel, then vampires again, then zombies, then ripping off public domain classics by putting in monsters, then dystopian YA, then steampunk, and soon probably more fucking vampires. 10 years of supplementing his full-time writer income by doing freelance high school football and basketball stories for the local paper. After 10 years of pure bullshit, he'd written something that simply could not miss. He'd just emailed that something, that can't miss something, to Morty, his agent, who by now had surely read over the brief manuscript. Victor knew Morty would rave over the piece. The way things were going, Morty would probably just happen to be having lunch with some major publisher. Morty would share the story. The publisher would flip over it and instantly offer at least a cool million. Victor prophetically knew these things for one simple reason. When you sell your soul to the devil, fame and fortune are a done deal. The phone beeped softly. Despite his dulled reactions, Victor answered without a moment's thought. He slowly pulled the cellular to his ear as if it were a 30-pound dumbbell, and he was on his last, excruciatingly slow rep. Hello?
Victor!
Morty's enthusiasm ripped through Victor's vodka-addled brain.
This is Morty. I just got your manuscript, kiddo. I have to say, I never thought I'd see you write something like this. But it's incredible!
Thanks, Victor said. Morty screamed each sentence as if he were an orgasmic guest of a Playboy Mansion orgy.
I mean, this is a showstopper! You're going to be a household name, my boy! I knew there was a reason I stuck by you. Where have you been hiding this stuff the last 10 years?
Up my ass, maybe, Victor said, his words thick and slurred. You might say I found a new muse.
Well, I'll buy that muse a drink.
Beat you to it, Mort.
Sounds like it, kiddo. Listen, you're not going to believe this, but I just happened to be having lunch with Joshua Talent, the publisher of Penguin Group.
You don't say. Victor took a quick pull from the bottle. His taste buds were long dead from the cheap liquor, and at room temperature, the vodka went down like lukewarm water.
Yeah, and he read the manuscript just now, right at the table. I mean, of course, it's only 10 pages long, but he loved it. He offered us $1.6 million for domestic rights, and we haven't even talked about international...
Imagine the luck, Victor said.
I have to admit, when I saw the title, Fanny the Fluffy Little Kitten, I thought you were nuts. But it's the best damn children's book I've ever seen. Joshua loved it, wants to get the art and have it on the presses by this Christmas.
Ho, 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 Victor said. Just cut the deal, Morty. Do whatever you think is best. Victor hung up. He set the phone down and lifted the gun. After a decade of ceaseless struggle, Satan had come to him in, of all places, the soup aisle at Meyer's grocery store. There was no fire and brimstone, no tail, no horns, not even that cool hipster pointy goatee the devil always sported in the movies. He was actually kind of fat. Wore a 3-piece suit with Gucci shoes. He didn't look at all like Satan. He looked more like Dom DeLuise posing as a lawyer.
Got a deal for you, Victor,
Satan had said. From the first syllable out of his mouth, Victor instantly knew who he was. Victor hadn't wasted time with all that, how did you know my name, and how do I know you're really the devil, bullshit. Because something inside him identified Satan as sure as a redneck knows a new Garth Brooks tune from the first twangy white trash lyric.
You want to be a writer, Victor?
Satan had asked. I can facilitate this desire. You'll be famous as all get out. Make over $100 million. Be a household name. Do the talk show circuit. Book tours. Have movies made of every book you put out. The American dream. Exactly what you always wanted, Victor. To be famous. To be a writer. Victor surprised himself by not even thinking twice. He made the deal. They slunk out to Satan's black Cadillac Escalade to sign the contract, as if Satan were a cheap $20 hooker and they were knocking out a quick blowjob. Satan, of course, had parked his obnoxiously huge vehicle in a handicapped spot. Victor abstractly wondered how the Escalade handled on hot brimstone. He had to prick his finger and sign in his own blood. His signature was damn near illegible, more a smear of thick red streaks than a name, like the writing of a 5-year-old tripping on a double hit of acid. But somehow,
Victor knew penmanship didn't really matter. Satan handed him a copy of the 150-page contract, grumbled something about beating rush hour traffic, hopped in the Escalade and drove away, ignoring a no-left-turn sign as he did. Alone in the parking lot, Victor looked at the contract. No human skin, no parchment, just standard office paper. It was even notarized. Had he just made a deal for his immortal soul? 15 minutes earlier, he hadn't even believed in soul. There was one way to find out if it was real or just some kind of elaborate prank played on a nobody wannabe writer. Victor rushed home and attacked his computer. Would he write the next horror masterpiece? The new Frankenstein? Dracula? Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde? And no, he wouldn't participate in starting yet another round of vampire copycat bullshit. He wanted something original. How long would it take him? A month? 2 months? It took him all of 25 minutes. Once he started typing, he couldn't stop. For only the second time in his life, Victor felt true terror. The first time he'd felt that coppery emotion, he was an 11-year-old on a new Huffy Trailmaster dirt bike, bought at Kmart and freshly assembled. Riding along happily on the shiny new bike, he nearly went under the axle of a Frito's semi, captained by a man who collected both empty Jack Daniels bottles and DUI citations. That fear was nothing compared to what he felt as his fingers did their own thing. As Victor wrote, that creeping feeling of dread grew stronger. Try as he might, the only thing he could think of was the quirky story of a little lost kitten named Fanny. He wrote Fanny's first misadventure, how she got lost in a mall and couldn't find Clara, her 7-year-old human owner. Sweating, shaking, and horrified, Victor finished the story, knowing that he'd been duped. He started a new document, trying to think of death and terror and malice. He'd just met Old Scratch himself. How much more inspiration did a budding horror writer need? Despite the visions of death, dismemberment, and despair that raged through his head, all he could find was an uncontrollable urge to write about a wacky camping trip in which Fanny made friends with Gwyneth, the greedy grasshopper, and Sally, the soft-spoken squirrel. Tears streaming down his face, Victor emailed the first story to his editor, pulled the bottle of Five Star from the top shelf, fished the gun out of his closet, and sat at the kitchen table to wait. He'd known, somehow, that Fanny the Fluffy Little Kitten was a guaranteed smash hit. According to Morty, that guess had been dead on. Now, Victor was on the precipice of fame and fortune from his writing. And yet, he wanted none of it. He'd sold his soul, which was a truly admirable act for the next king of horror, yet wound up writing cheesy children's books. Victor lifted the gun to his temple. No point in waiting. He was heading to hell. What good were another 30 or 40 years compared to eternity? 3 decades, 3 seconds. It was all the same in the grander scope of things. But if he died now, he didn't have to live through hordes of laughing children screaming for his autograph, or the plush Fanny dolls filling the stores at Christmas. He didn't really want to live another 40 years reviled as the person who invented the next annoying and probably pedophiliac purple dinosaur. with his thumb. Victor pulled back the hammer and felt the catch vibrate lightly through his skull. He lifted the bottle for the last time. A one-for-the-road drink, so to speak. Took a big swallow and set it down. His finger slowly squeezed the trigger. His doorbell rang. He blinked, finger still on the trigger. The doorbell rang again. Victor set the gun down, grabbed the vodka bottle, and stumbled toward the door to his apartment. Maybe it was a pair of Jehovah's Witnesses. Wouldn't they get a kick out of this situation? He'd head to hell, clutching a copy of The Watchtower. Victor opened the door and looked out at a clown. A clown holding a briefcase. The clown wore a baggy pink suit with lime green ruffles at the sleeves and collar. His giant red patent leather shoes stuck out at least a foot in front of him. A nose, which was almost as red as the shoes, stood in sharp contrast to his white grease paint face. A severe black grease paint frown covered his mouth and most of his cheeks and chin. A ratty red and black Dr. Seuss hat stood up on his head. The hat added to his 6-foot frame, making him seem almost 7 feet tall. To complete the ensemble, a plastic blue flower protruded from his lapel. Victor could make out a tiny squirt gun-like opening in the blossom's center. Victor was speechless. That didn't seem to faze the clown. "Victor Sellers?" the clown asked. Victor nodded. "I'm glad I caught you before you did anything stupid." The clown produced a business card. "Allow me to introduce myself. I'm Chuckles Mulrooney, attorney for the damned. May I come in?" Chuckles Mulrooney, attorney for the damned, sat on Victor's living room couch, concentrating on Victor's contract with the devil. A copy of Fanny the Fluffy Little Kitten, still warm from the laser printer, sat on Chuckles's briefcase. A once white blanket covered the couch, obscuring patches of duct tape and disintegrating red and yellow plaid fabric. Despite the blanket and the tape, bits of ancient stuffing still escaped the old cushions and found their way onto the worn shag carpet. "Nice decor," Chuckle said. "Kind of post-apocalyptic Brady Bunch." Victor sat in a splintery rocking chair, one of the few other pieces of furniture he owned, including a kitchen table and chairs, a dresser, and a mattress that lay on the bedroom floor. He clutched the 5-star bottle, now 3/4 empty, and stared at the clown on his couch. Chuckles shook his head.
"You could have done better for yourself. 1.6 million for your eternal soul? Not much of a deal, Victor."
"You don't say," Victor said.
"Yep. You could have netted at least 2 million and written a real book. Not that I didn't like Fanny the Fluffy Little Kitten, of course. If I had kids, I'm sure they'd love it. But a mere 1.6 mil? You didn't even try and sweeten the deal."
"I wasn't aware one could haggle with the devil."
"That's the problem with kids today," Chuckles said. "You all don't think twice about paying retail."
Victor drank another long, burning swig.
"Listen," Chuckles said. "Here's my offer. You got tricked, and there's nothing you can do about that. But you should realize how much money you can make in the course of your life. What I'm offering you is this. I get half of everything you make. In return, I'll get you back your immortal soul.
Victor stared and said nothing. There was a clown on his couch, reviewing the pros and cons of a bona fide contract with Satan. The sureness of it all stunned him into silence. Victor finally spoke.
Who exactly the fuck are you? I'm supposed to believe you're some kind of clown lawyer? How did you find out about my deal?
I'm not a clown lawyer, Chuckles said. I'm an attorney for the damned. It's my business to find people like you. I find loopholes in contracts with the devil and get my clients' souls back. For this service, I get half of everything they make from said contract.
And you dress like Ronald McDonald. Why?
Victor followed up the question with another long pull from the bottle. He was so bombed he couldn't even smell the pungent alcohol. Chuckles sighed. He sniffed his blue plastic flower.
I do this because I was once just like you, Victor. I used to be a struggling lawyer. I worked hard, very hard, but I just didn't have the goods. I wanted to be the greatest lawyer of all time, better than Cochrane, better than Darrow, better than all of them. The devil came to me while I was buying condoms at 7-Eleven, and we hashed out a deal. He gets my soul, and I get to be the greatest lawyer that ever lived.
So, what happened?
He came through on his end, Chuckles said. I mean, I'm the greatest. A legal Muhammad Ali. I can give a deposition that will make your head spin. Most cases would be over by the time I finished my opening statement. I've become a master of the spoken word, a manipulator of emotions, an artist of legalese. And I have a photographic memory of every case and precedent in the history of mankind. Not just America, mind you, but every case that's ever come to trial anywhere under any system. You should hear some stories about Cro-Magnon law. Fascinating stuff. And that Cherokee legal system, where they slice open your scrotum, insert a burning coal, then sew it back up again? Now that's capital punishment.
And Victor was worried about hell? Hopefully, hell didn't mean burning coals stitched into one's nutsack.
At any rate, I'm the best lawyer of all time, Chuckles said. The devil came through on his deal. He added one little clause, though. Every day I wake up with the uncontrollable urge to dress like a circus clown. I can't help it.
If dressing like a clown is wrong, you don't want to be right?
Don't be a smartass, Victor, Chuckles said. The first thing I do in the morning is shower. The second thing I do is put on the grease paint. You should see my wardrobe. It looks like a trailer from Barnum and Bailey. As you can imagine, it's difficult to practice law when you show up with size 27 feet, honk your nose every 5 minutes, and squirt the judge with your lapel flower.
Victor nodded.
I can see where that would get in the way, he said,
then polished off the bottle.
Satan scammed my ass, Chuckles said. He is, if you'll pardon the expression, one crafty old devil. They don't call him the trickster for nothing. I have all this legal prowess, and I can't use it in a real court of law. But you know what? He fucked with the wrong guy.
About a week after realizing the best suit I'd ever wear would have the Bozo label on it, I decided to kill myself.
Why bother living for another 30 or 40 years? It's only a tick of the clock anyway, you know?
Yeah, Victor said, glancing at the still-cocked magnum on his cheap kitchen table.
I know what you mean.
Then it hit me. That's exactly what he wants. That's why he tricks us, so he can get our souls faster. I found out later he's got a monthly quota to fill. Who would have thought that?
A quota?
Victor said.
Yeah, like a state cop with speeding tickets. Anyway, that tricking stuff got me thinking. If he can trick us, play with the wording, come up with new meanings, then it means the contract is just a starting off point. It's open to interpretation, if you follow the logic. Then I decided to get even with the fork-tailed bastard.
Get even? Victor said. With the devil. Chuckles nodded, his big hat flopping in time.
I decided to represent people who've made deals with the devil and get them out of their contracts. I do this for three reasons. First, I'm getting amazingly rich off it. Second, because I'll keep doing it until he tears up my contract and gives me my soul back. Third, I do it just to piss him off.
You want to piss off Satan?
Piss him off and teach him a geography lesson.
The black grease paint bizarrely magnified the clown's smile.
This is America. You don't fuck with a lawyer.
You have been listening to The Bones Are White serialized short story audiobook written by Scott Sigler. This audiobook was produced by A. Kovacs and engineered by Steve Rickyberg. For more information on the author or to hear his free weekly fiction podcast, go to scottsigler.com. Theme music is the song Greed by the band Separation of Sanity.
I am a creeping cancer, rots you to the core, pumping through your blackened heart, seduction of your soul, separation of your senses, sanity, your currency. I am your rolling gun, on your knees, kiss and scream.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of supernatural horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
I need you to save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.